Hello, everybody, and welcome to All Sports Best, the podcast. I'm Trey Gonzalez, and I'm here with a very special guest. He is the owner and head trainer of Superior Athletics in New York. His name is Billy Rahm. Billy, how you doing?
Great, man. How you doing, Trey?
I'm doing very well, and I appreciate you for being on the show today with us. I like hearing about, you know, different sides of sports themselves. You get to be more behind the scenes than a lot of other people do in the sports industry. So I'm going to start off with just, you know, where you were born and raised in New York and what it was like.
Yeah, so I was born on Long Island. Haven't gotten very far still on Long Island, but it's definitely a different world than a lot of other places. My older sister, she actually lives down in Jacksonville, Florida. I have a few friends who are around the country, so I've gotten to go and visit. And we recently were just in Omaha for the College World Series for another company. And it's so different being on Long Island and everything that goes into Long Island. Mm-hmm. It's not what the Jersey Shore looks like in entirety.
Okay.
But it's just definitely a different world.
Have you crossed paths with any of them, Jersey Shore?
Oh, with the Jersey Shore people? Yeah, I mean, they've been, when there was taping and filming and stuff back in the day when that was going on, I'd be out in towns and different things, and you'll see people with camera crews and different film stuff, and not that I myself met anybody and, like, had conversations with them, but you'll see certain celebrities being around Long Island. I mean, my girlfriend the other day was on a spin bike next to the guy Larry David.
Okay.
He's the guy who wrote Seinfeld, for people who don't know.
Oh, man.
And he was right next to her on a spin bike. So, like, Long Island's a very, very big place, but also a very small place. You see a lot of famous people everywhere.
That's pretty cool. And I'm going to have to hear about some of the celebrities or famous people that you've seen or met here shortly. But I wanted to know kind of what drew you to the sports world in the first place. Obviously, you have a big connection to sports. You're around them all the time. In a more raw form than most people are, but what drew you to sports in the first place?
So I was an athlete for most of my life and won some awards and different things for myself and had an opportunity to participate at a relatively high level for a little bit of time for myself. Obviously, I wasn't a professional, but my own issues and my injuries and things like that kind of got me interested in how would I stop this if it was other people? How could I help other people?
Yeah.
And I was always a better coach and a better educator than I was myself a player. And a few people that I ended up working with right after I graduated high school, some of the people who I started to train and work with and have kind of communication with ended up making it in the NFL and playing stuff there, so I had a good kind of pipeline right out of the gate. And on top of that, I just built a good reputation from training other people I knew, and that kept me in the sports world. I actually went to college and got a degree in marketing. And it ended up being something where I had a decision to make. Do I want to continue going down the marketing route, or do I dive into this strength conditioning industry and kind of follow my passion and do the thing that I really wanted to do? And I chose the passion route versus going for the, you know, button up everyday job.
Wow. And it seemed to have been a very good choice, and it's worked out for you very well, obviously. Would you say that some of your frustration was a part of your success and why you wanted to join? Frustration from injury?
Yeah. I mean, the frustration from that is, you know, you always wonder, in all instances, I think for everybody, what if I had done X? What if I had done Y? And for a lot of people, you know, they end up getting bitter because of their what ifs, especially with athletes, because when you get hurt, you never really know how far you would have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, it's not much further than the level they went to, sadly. But it always gives you kind of that thing that you can go back on. And even in business and careers, you know, people look back on it and they have that moment where, okay, what if? Well, you know, coaching for me was an opportunity to look at the what if and say, okay, well, let me do the what if with the next person. I made mistakes. I missed out. I didn't learn things till later in life. How can I take what I've learned and accelerate some other people beyond where I was able to achieve.
Yeah.
And that for myself has always been something that I've been passionate about, is helping other people. And I never knew exactly how that was going to play. My mom always used to say, when I was like 8 years old, she's like, Billy's going to be a teacher when he grows up. And I didn't go into a full-on teaching mode, but I train, or I work with, or I have some relationship with, you know, over 100 athletes every year. And that's been for the last decade. So I have thousands of kids and people that I've interacted with and helped at some level. So my biggest thing is, if I can delay or push off or bypass frustrations that I went through because I didn't have answers, if I could give those answers, that's what I'm doing for it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so such a fresh look, getting past the what ifs. I like that. Definitely. What sports would you say were your best? What were you the best at when you were growing up?
My best sport was football, followed by wrestling.
Okay.
And then followed by probably track and field.
Okay.
Shot put and discus. Football was my main one. But yeah, I was relatively athletic. I got up on varsity sports as early as my freshman year in high school. And I was at a pretty high level right from jump, and there were a lot of other sports I wanted to play, but you know, with only three seasons being able to do stuff, sometimes my passion outran my skill, and I try different sports, especially in the spring.
So you're saying to me, from what I've heard, and obviously your favorite two sports, you're a very physical person, and that might have helped kind of make up your mind towards helping people get stronger and more conditioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my own physicality, my own time in a weight room, my own time working on myself, my own time struggling, definitely gave me a love for the best sides of sports. Getting to see what those things can do, and you know, at one point in time, having schools come through and recruit me and try to offer me scholarships and different things to play sports, and that was a cool opportunity that now I get to help other athletes and other kids kind of go through that process and be a guide and be somebody for them to talk to. I'm on one phone right now, and I'm text messaging on the other one occasionally, because I have athletes who are at showcases and tournaments around the country right now.
Wow.
And they're all trying to get their scholarships and different opportunities and who ran fast and who's being recruited by who. And it's fun to, you know, have taken that and transitioned it into something that I really like.
So you wear a lot of hats. It seems like you help with training. You're partly a teacher. You're a mentor. You've definitely helped raise some of these kids. Obviously their parents have a big role in how successful they are, but you're doing a lot to help make sure that their dreams in their sport are realized. So what does it feel like to have such an impact on so many people?
I think that's the reason why, you know, a lot of people choose coach over maybe teacher. And this is no slight at a teacher, because I think teachers do some work that people underestimate how important it is when you have a great teacher and you have a great educator.
Sure.
What they can do for a kid and what they can do for their future. But there's a reason why, you know, Iowa State is paying their strength and conditioning coach $750,000 a year.
Wow.
There's a reason why the strength and conditioning coach for Alabama's football team gets paid over $500,000 a year. It's because those players, those athletes, have a different relationship with their strength coach than they do with almost any of their other coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You get more of the person, and you get less of the guard. So I enjoy being a coach, because I can kind of get past the guard, and it helps me in instances where, you know, maybe an athlete is not doing all the stuff that they could be doing, or they're doing some stuff that they shouldn't be doing, and you know, their skill coach or their sport coach or a teacher or a parent, sometimes it's harder for them to break it down, whereas I kind of am able to kind of sneak past that. So I really enjoy that aspect of being a coach, where I can make an impact on a kid's mentality about how they treat things. And then hopefully they bring that into the classroom, and now they're better for their teacher. And now this teacher, this person who has the skill of developing their knowledge, has an easier time, because I can connect with the kid on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not in an environment that's you know, foreign to them. When I was younger, I wrote a speech in my freshman year of college, and it was talking about genius. And one of the things I talked about was that in America, we definitely prioritize people who are mentally very intelligent.
Right.
If you get an A in class, you're great. If you get a C or a D, you're doing something wrong and your genius isn't special. But sometimes that C or D kid, their genius is actually in what they're physically able to do. And they can't be celebrated because we have a different stigma for what their genius should be. And Albert Einstein said, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb, it'll spend its whole life thinking that it's stupid.
Right.
I get to work with some physical geniuses. One kid that I got to work with since he's about 13 years old, he just left for Ohio State University. He'll be starting at tight end for them probably as a freshman.
That's amazing.
And he's a physical genius. He can do anything with his body that he ever wanted to in his entire life. To base him solely off of maybe the essay he can write or the math that he can do limits his genius. And I get to kind of allow athletes to understand that they can expose that genius and still do what they do on the other side, and that their greatness can be defined on many levels. And that's a cool area to be able to do when you're a coach. And I think that's something that's special that coaches get an option to do.
Being able to see it like that and really take it in and really buy into your own, you know, your own thought process and things like that has obviously helped you to build your reputation. You've been able to connect with athletes. You've been able to touch and impact them so much that you have a really good reputation. You've clearly been recognized for it and stuff like that. You know, how did you start getting recognition in the first place when it comes to what I've seen is as far as Yahoo Sports, Stack.com, T Nation, the list goes on, Elite FTS, and Live Strong. How did that all come about?
I think that part of it was when you're in a certain part of your career, and for me it was kind of the middle part of my career. So at this point I've been coaching people for money for 14 years.
Yeah.
So probably halfway through that time slot, I felt like I needed to kind of position myself and show what I was capable of doing. So one of the things that I think I do pretty well is I'm a decent writer. So I wanted to take some of the thoughts, some of the concepts, some of the things that I developed, and I wanted to write. So I actually started writing for some smaller publications just to get bylines, just to get some opportunity. And then leveraged that into the next opportunity. And I think the first one that I wrote for out of those bigger ones was Elite FTS. Elite FTS is one of the biggest powerlifting websites in the world.
Okay.
Some of the people who have written for them are world record holders in powerlifting, so bench, squat, deadlift. Some of the biggest people in the industry at one point in time, that was where they went through. And they're a well-respected equipment company. They were the first one to publish one of my articles and do it on a big level. And that was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
Because I started reading some of the stuff from the guy who started Elite FTS. His name's Dave Tate. I actually read some of Dave's stuff and watched some videos of his when I was like a 13-year-old kid trying to figure out how to make myself better at sports.
Mm-hmm.
So to, you know, 12 years later to actually get to write for his website and to put out content was a big thing. That then also opened the door for me to write for Stack. Stack.com is a website that specializes in athletes. And Stack gave me an option. At one point in time, we were getting some articles got syndicated and got picked up by Yahoo Sports and got posted from Stack onto Yahoo Sports.
That's awesome.
So some of my things ended up getting featured there. And then T Nation is actually, at one point in time, it was the biggest strength and conditioning website in terms of quality information that you could get in the world. So one of the guys who used to write for it, his name's Mike Boyle. Mike Boyle is one of the most famous strength and conditioning coaches ever. He actually coached the Boston Red Sox. He was their strength and conditioning coach when they won the World Series.
Wow.
He's worked with Boston University and helped them win national championships in hockey. He's overall just, you know, he's one of the best. So he's one of the people who's written for that amongst many others. So T Nation was also a big deal. And that really was just another thing that came about as I gained credibility locally. I was able to then develop some regionally and then maybe a little bit nationally.
Were you ever contacted and given feedback over your articles? Obviously, it gets in front of a lot of eyes. A lot of people are reading it, and you're getting a lot of these clicks. You must be getting some feedback and some people saying, hey, you know what? You made an impact, or you made me think a different way, and they let you know. Did anybody kind of come to you like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had people who have reached out through email, and, you know, they've tried to get deeper elaboration on some of the things that I've written. Or they continue to, you know, send me messages or follow me through some sort of Instagram or something like that, yeah, where they can kind of have some other relationship with me and ask questions. And that's really cool to see, you know, to get those people who will respond back. And then the other thing is it just helps you to build a network of people who do what you do that you can now kind of work with. So some of those people who read your article, who might be strength and conditioning coaches in, you know, another state, they now have seen some of your stuff, and they have an athlete who's going to a college that's maybe local to me here, and they trust what I have to say because they followed some of the things that I've written.
Oh, yeah.
And those writings kind of allow me to kind of get an opportunity to work with one of their athletes because they trust the quality of the information that I'm putting out.
Obviously, referrals are a big deal, too, so can you tell me a couple of the notable athletes that you've been able to work with or be in contact with?
Yeah, I mean, one of the athletes, I just mentioned him before. He's worked at our facility in the past. His name's Jeremy. I won't use his last name, but he's at Ohio State, and he's a tight end. He's a very good player, 5-star recruit. We've got to work with him from the time he was 13 years old and on. Kind of got to see him develop. Before him, we actually trained Afani Moma. He was a tight end for the last 3 years for the Arizona Cardinals. We've had a few guys who were in Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball. One of my athletes, Stephen Woods, he's now a pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays. He was actually one of the top prospects for San Francisco Giants organization, and he was traded amongst a few other players, but he was traded directly for why am I blanking on his name? I just said
Evan Longoria.
Evan Longoria. There you go.
There you go.
He was traded for Longoria, so that was obviously a big trade, and it was a big trade for San Francisco, and it was a big trade for the Rays because they got to bring in some prospects that they felt like were going to give them a future. And he got to be one of those players. So we've really been lucky to have some athletes have some great success, and then we have athletes littered throughout Division I sports and Division II sports. We have a few international players, so we've really gotten a chance to I've gotten a chance to work with a lot of different people.
Is that the best feeling that you can get as a strength and conditioning coach, to see one of your athletes sign with a professional team, sign with a college, get a scholarship, and move on?
I would tell you that there's grades to it all. What's great for one kid isn't great for another kid. But like, we have kids who come to us and they get cut from their school team.
Uh-huh.
And then that kid comes to us for a year, and, you know, they go back and then they make their school team, and, you know, fast forward, and they're a captain of their team as a senior, and that same player may never play again, but they now have memories, and they have an opportunity, and they have like life satisfaction that we were able to help them kind of get through one struggle in their life where they felt like they weren't good enough, or they couldn't achieve, or, and show them that when they work hard and they believe in themselves, that it is possible. That's one thing that's an amazing feeling. And I would say, honestly, when guys sign pro contracts, you're so elated for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just everybody's dream is that top achievement, to make it to that level. And, you know, even beyond that, once you get to that level, it's like, could I be a Hall of Famer?
Right.
But really, when kids get scholarships to go to college for free, and they get to use sports to get an education and to set the rest of their life up. One of my athletes and a close friend of mine now at this point in time, he got a full ride to the University of Maine to play football. And, you know, you fast forward, he's now getting his master's degree for free in sports management department, helping with the sports team, sports organizations. And that that use of sports to leverage himself into having a master's degree from a relatively well-known university, and to have it all for free, to have it for free because of sports. That to me is always the win. Like, you win if you get that. Everything beyond that is like just extra.
Yeah, and it seems like you keep in touch with your athletes for the most part. Have you kept in touch with athletes from the very beginning of when you started to now?
Funny enough, I don't think that there's a time in my life that I trained people that I'm not still in touch with the athletes I was training at that time.
That's awesome.
And again, this is over 14 years. So I have a kid that I trained when he was in seventh grade and he was being bullied. He was going through some rough stuff. His parents had kind of gotten through a divorce and he had gone through some things and everything else. And, I just really started to full-time do this. It wasn't just a part-time thing. It was my only thing.
Right.
I was all in that I was going to be, you know, a strength and conditioning coach, and I wasn't going to have those other jobs. I didn't need them anymore. Training people was the thing that I was going to do. So this kid was one of those people who kind of was on board then. I still talk to him. We actually went out and got food not too long ago, and he's now in the Navy. And he does, he's like search and rescue inside the Navy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Another one of my athletes trained him since high school. He's actually in, he made it through the selection process for Army Rangers. So he's in his mid-20s now, and I've trained him since he was 17.
That's outstanding.
He's probably 25, 26 now.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, and then again, there's athletes. The athlete I mentioned before, who now he's getting his master's degree. I mean, I've known him since he's 12, and I was almost like an older brother figure because I was in high school still when I met him. And then I trained him, you know, during his professional career. I trained him beyond that, and we still spend time together today. You know, so he was 12 then. He's 28 now, so it's been a 16-year relationship right there. I definitely. The relationships I make with people are genuine. I really do. I care about people in general, and I believe so much in people that this is just an opportunity for me to display belief and to help people. So it's really fulfilling on many levels.
Man, I gotta know, because I know that you stay in touch, you have good relationships, and obviously you spend a lot of time with these athletes while you're training them and everything. So do you ever compete? Do you ever compete with your clients? Do you ever say like, hey, you know what, I'm gonna beat you in this, or see if you can beat me at this, and kind of raise that competition level?
I mean, on a daily basis, we actually joke around. You know, my coaches in the past and coaches I've had in the past, coaches I have now. I always will make a statement, and it's, I named my company Superior Athletics, not Mediocre Athletics.
Right.
I'm always willing to want to step up and try hard, and give that effort. So one of the things that we compete on a weekly basis is spikeball.
Oh yes.
So do you know the game spikeball?
I love the game of spikeball.
So we have extremely intense competitions with spikeball. We'll compete on who can make a tennis ball into the top of a foam roller from 30 yards away. And we'll shoot and we'll do that. And pretty much every day is a competition with my athletes in some way, shape, or form. Either a bet that you can't do this or you can't do that. So, yeah, I always will try to get in with my athletes in some capacity, compete in something, just because we always want to make them kind of immune to competition and just enjoy competition and recognize that competition isn't fatal. Competition is something where you're allowed to fail, but try, give your effort, and see where you end up. And you can kind of measure your ability. You can measure your work. You can measure your confidence all through competition. So if we can kind of make competition an enjoyable experience at all times, then when they get into those bigger competitions, they've been there, they've felt that juice before, and they know what it's like. So absolutely.
That's awesome. I've had experience as an athlete as well, and I've been trained by different people and weightlifting and conditioning and all of that stuff, and that's the one thing you'll get used to is you can have a little bit of fun while you're doing really hard work, and you almost feel like it's not, you're not doing as much. I don't know how to explain it. I guess that's kind of how I explain it. Is you have a little fun.
100%.
Yeah. So that's 100%. Awesome. I think that that's great. And if I'm ever in New York, we'll have to get a game of spike ball going.
Oh man, let me know. I got a squad. We're ready to go.
Bill, who is the youngest athlete you've ever trained? And maybe not by name, but maybe by age, youngest to oldest.
Oh, wow. What's trained mean? Been paid to train or just trained because I was coaching them?
We'll just make it all inclusive.
So let's make it all inclusive. Probably 2 years old.
Wow.
And it's not for money. My nephews, my sister's kids, teaching them basic stuff. So really at 2 years old, teaching, you know, push-ups or teaching how to pick something up, putting them in obstacle courses and giving them an opportunity to kind of develop their spatial awareness, their cognitive function, their problem solving. And like, you don't think about that when you do that with kids. Like, you put out an obstacle course and you're like, all right, it's an obstacle course. They're just having a great time.
Sure.
But really an obstacle course is different shapes, colors, movements, coordinations, trying to link all of them together. How do I link this movement to this movement in order to create that movement?
Yeah.
So we're doing all of those things. So like when I hear coach, you know, a kid at what age, like we have classes where kids have been like 5 or 6 years old where they're learning basic speed mechanics and they're learning certain things. But coaching is really, there's so many gradations to what a coaching moment is, and what actually is coaching. But I would say that, you know, kids who are young, I put them in situations to try to help them get better. And the oldest athlete, since every human is an athlete,
yeah.
The oldest person that I've had a chance to work with, I believe the oldest age of a person in a single session with me was 87, 88.
Impressive.
Yeah, so, and again, that 87-year-old was pushing a sled and moving it on the turf and learning how to, and working on their deadlifts and doing stuff like that. It's just, again, it depends on, you know, what type of deadlift, what type of sled, what, how much weight, how much this. You know, everything's the same movements. You treat athlete like an athlete, but you just have to give them something that they can get better from and not something that's overdoing it.
Bill, I'd love to hear a normal day or an average day in your shoes. What it from start to finish, what it kind of looks like.
Oh, man. So I own another company. So I do some work with them too. So when I split everything out in the end of the day, right now I'm doing about 50 hours of training a week. So I do about 50 training sessions a week, give or take. My day will usually start with a 5 a.m. wake up. After 5 a.m. wake up, I'll usually head to, the gym, train a few morning sessions. So till about 10 a.m. Then I'll have a few meetings from 10 a.m. till about noon. Noon, I'll train adult clients who live or have the means by which that they can come in the middle of the day. And I'll train from noon till about 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Then at 4 o'clock until about 9 o'clock at night, we have athlete classes. Groups roll and start every hour and a half. We have another group go where we do speed and agility, strength and conditioning. And that's Monday through Friday, really. And then Saturdays, I have the same thing. I'll be in the gym by about 6:30 in the morning, start training people. And those sessions will run until about 2:30 in the afternoon. And then occasionally I'll have a Sunday too. So there's definitely the days of the week and the weeks and the months where I'm working 7 days a week and I'm doing a lot of training.
Dedication's the name of the game for sure. And it definitely seems like it is in your case.
Absolutely. And it's not hard to do what I do when it's the things that I love. And that's the biggest thing I think that every person always needs to, you know, remember. There's things we do because we have to, and there's things we can do that because we want to.
Yeah.
The more things that we can do in the course of a day, a week, a month, a year that we want to, the happier we are as people. So finding work and finding people that I enjoy to work with and fit me is just as important as finding work in general.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky enough now that I can say no to some people, and I can, you know, maybe help another person and say yes to them, even if they might not have the means and resources to do it at all.
I noticed that in your normal day, your average day, you don't make time specifically for yourself to train. So are you kind of piecing together a big workout throughout the day as you train these people and help them? You're kind of doing things as well?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me is if I'm in the presence of a person in a session, that hour's their hour, not my hour.
Okay.
So, like, one of the things for me is I'm not necessarily jumping in their session with them and doing stuff, because if somebody's with me, I need to be their coach.
Yeah.
There's a time where maybe I'll hop in to get some motivation, or I'll hop in and I'll demonstrate an exercise, and I'll pick some reps up here and there doing that. But really, I think that's the biggest struggle that a lot of the top guys will tell you that they have, especially when they're doing their own private facility, is, you know, if you got 25, 30 minutes, you know, you're going to take advantage and you're going to put together a workout that you can do in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So that you can clean off, cool off, and get ready for the next thing that starts in a half hour. And then for me, you know, it's probably 2 days a week I'll get a good hour-long session in, and then it's probably 2 to 3 days a week where I'm only getting a 20-minute session in. It's better than nothing. And then there's times of the year where I definitely get more time. So for me, especially on Long Island, we train a tremendous amount of lacrosse and baseball players.
Okay.
So our least busy time of the year is March 15th to May 1st. So in that 6-week window, I'll usually train a more aggressive cycle. I'll do some things that are, you know, more beat them up on my body, because I have the ability to kind of take some time. And maybe I'm only doing 25 or 30 sessions a week, and I have the ability to kind of relax. And then we hit the summer again, and I'm outside, and I'm sprinting, and I'm running around, and I'm doing 50, 60 sessions. Then I got to, you know, be easier. I got to make sure that I can be expert at what I do when I need to do it.
So you're very much in charge of the physicality of all of your athletes, yourselves as well, your own physicality as well, and all that that entails. But what I wanted to know was kind of the eating routines, kind of like your diets and things like that. What is it that you like to focus on when you're eating, or when you're telling your athletes about their diets?
So I think that, again, all nutritional information needs to be personalized to some degree. I think that there's some hard and fast rules that are good for everybody. For me personally, one of the big things that I've been focusing on lately, especially, I'm in my 30s. So being in my 30s was different than being in my 20s.
Yeah.
So starting to plan for what that means, you know, I don't necessarily feel any different. I know a lot of people keep telling me I'm going to feel different. So I try to get ahead of it. So one of the things that I do a lot now is I'll drink a few kombuchas a week. I probably drink about 4 kombucha teas a week to help me with gut health. The biggest thing with gut health is, you know, most of our immune system is actually in our gut. It's how we process food. It's how we process all that.
Right.
So if your gut health is off, it's going to impact your ability to absorb nutrients. It's going to impact your immunity. It's going to impact how your body looks, how your body feels. So if you can take care of your gut health by having like something like kombucha or yogurt that has probiotics inside of it, you do a better job of assimilating all the food that you need and also making sure that you stay healthy. So for me, that's something that's important for me every day. Then just balancing out and making sure that you have whole food as often as you can, good whole food. So cooking for yourself is a big thing.
Yeah.
The more often that you can cook for yourself, even if it's not the, you know, the greatest food that you possibly can think of in the entire world, if you're cooking it at home and you're taking out food and you're chopping things with a knife and you're making food, it's worlds better than going to a restaurant and getting something. So that's always something that we try to tell our athletes. But we also have some athletes that they have a difficult time adding any weight whatsoever. So we also flip the script completely. And we'll tell kids that we want them to have an ice cream shake as often as they can.
Wow.
You know, because they need to get more calories in. So calories becomes a war of attrition. A really skinny kid oftentimes feels full very quickly. So because they feel full very quickly, we have to tell them that we need them to eat calorie-dense food. Calorie-dense food is like peanut butter. You know, two spoonfuls of peanut butter is almost 200 calories.
Wow.
I could have, you know, 4 cups of broccoli, and I wouldn't sniff that. So when we're eating food, we have to make sure that we're also taking into account how much food can the athlete actually fit into their body and how many calories are they required in order for them to meet their goals. So if we have an athlete who is, you know, a wide receiver for their football team and they're going to be going up to varsity and they only weigh 127 pounds, they might be too light for their sport. So because of that, I need to add armor, and I need to add armor oftentimes in a very short window. So then it becomes a numbers game of how do we acquire the amount of calories, the amount of food that we need, and what window. So different strategies for different folks. You know, what an adult person needs to eat in order to lose fat is not what an athlete who needs to gain weight and is playing sports, working out with a strength conditioning coach, going to skills practice, playing for a travel team. All those things start to add up to their energy expenditure every week.
Sure.
How are we replacing that enough that they grow at the speed that they need to when their body hasn't been growing that fast their whole life?
Yeah, wow, there's a lot that goes into it. That's for dang sure.
There's a whole other field of science that just focuses on that.
And I know that when it comes to sports, when it comes to lifts, when it comes to anything that you're involved with physically, you have your favorites. And I was wondering if you had a favorite. Do you have a favorite lift or a conditioning drill that you like to use personally?
So probably my favorite, I'll give you two, but they're really the same thing. Deadlift to me is, if I told you that I was going to put you on a desert island and a year from now you were going to have to be in a fight for your life.
Uh-huh.
And you could only do one exercise, and they were going to sit there and watch you. If you did any other exercise, it was over. You were done.
Okay.
I would tell you to deadlift.
Wow.
I would tell you to deadlift over squat. I would tell you deadlift over bench. I would tell you deadlift over, you know, running miles and miles around that island. I would just tell you to deadlift in all its variations and all its sets and reps and all of the capacities you can, just deadlift. Because the reality is, if I told you right now that you deadlifted, you know, just 225 pounds, if I said fast forward to when you can deadlift 500 pounds, I bet you weigh more, you run faster, you jump higher, your grip strength is tremendously better, your upper back strength is tremendously better, your chest is bigger, and your body fat is down.
Wow.
And the reality for most people is it really can be that simple. I mean, we can add complexity when we need to start having great athletes against great athletes. What changes the game? It's 1-2%, so we have to do other things. But a deadlift is really, to me, the end-all, be-all of most exercise for what you do. It should always be in a program in some capacity. The other one is same thing, much lower level. It's a kettlebell swing. So
okay.
A kettlebell swing for me it's the same thing. It's a hip hinge. It's a deadlift variation. It just looks a little bit different. And a kettlebell swing is great because I can do it with a kid who's 10 years old, who's never done any type of weight training before, just get them to learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do it with a relatively light weight, and we can keep building up that weight without really putting them in any danger. I also can do it with a 50-year-old woman who wants to lose weight, and it can be effective.
Wow.
So it's very versatile. It gives you a lot of bang for your buck, and that's where I would put my money if I had to.
Wow. I'm learning so much right now. I'm really enjoying this lesson that I'm taking in right now. So I appreciate it.
No problem. Yeah, absolutely.
So let's get out of sports training and all of that stuff. I want to know some more about your personal preferences and things that you like in your personal life, including your teams. We talked a little bit off of the air about some of the teams that we enjoyed. What's your favorite NFL, NBA, MLB teams?
Oh, wow. Okay. Which one do you want? Go in what order?
Let's go NBA.
NBA, I'm a New York Knicks fan.
Favorite player from the New York Knicks ever?
Favorite? Wow. This is that's a loaded question right there.
Is that a blindsided hit right there?
It's not. There's just always nuance to everything. I would tell you that at one point in time, Patrick Ewing was probably my favorite player.
Right.
But I would also tell you that I had the most fun in my life watching the Knicks when David Lee was a Knick.
Mm.
David Lee was a really good player for the Knicks. The Knicks drafted him out of the University of Florida. He ended up making a couple All-Star games. He actually was on the Golden State teams that ended up being pretty good but not getting all the way through.
Right.
And the Knicks let him go and instead signed Amari Stoudemire. Mm. And Stoudemire had one great year and then fell apart and collapsed. David Lee went on to average 20 points and 12 rebounds for Golden State Warriors in the playoffs. So I regret that he left. So
that's
Knicks and David Lee. I'll go Knicks and David Lee.
Wow. So and that's a surprising answer. I don't think I've ever heard that answer, but it's a good one too.
You're
because
welcome.
Okay, so let's go move into MLB. Favorite team and favorite all-time player?
That one is also difficult, but I'm a Mets fan.
Okay.
And again, I would say that my all-time favorite players and my favorite time of baseball, it was David Wright and Jose Reyes.
Okay. And they played together, so.
And I can't pick either of them. It was even.
Okay. I like that. Yeah, and that's when the Mets were fun to watch, not as much of a disaster. Would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, and really, they were cursed that year. They ended up having this reliever, Duaner Sanchez. Mm. And Duaner Sanchez is in a taxi at 3 a.m. and gets into a car accident and breaks his arm. And the Mets end up having to force a trade. And at the time, Duaner Sanchez was the best setup man in all of baseball. He was pretty much a closer who the Mets had coming out of the bullpen before their closer. And the Mets were the best team in baseball. Carlos Beltran. So you had Jose Reyes.
Yeah.
You had David Wright. You had Carlos Beltran. You had Carlos Delgado. You had the catcher, Paul Laduca, who batted like 340.
Right.
And the Mets were just really, really good. And Duaner Sanchez gets hurt, and it just impacts them. And they end up losing a game 7 to the Cardinals on a really nasty breaking pitch that Carlos Beltran watched strike 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which is still a gripe for every Mets fan who watched that. and the Cardinals went on to go into the World Series and sweep the World Series. So pretty much if the Mets had not gotten those injuries, they would have been the best. They were the number one seed. They would have been the best team. And they would have gone into their World Series and they would have won. And they haven't won a World Series since 1986, which I was alive for, but barely. So I have
barely
never
alive.
Really gotten to enjoy the Mets, you know, have that success. And I live in New York, so I have watched the New York Yankees win endlessly over and over again. So,
wow.
Painful.
No doubt. And the things you remember as a fan, it's interesting for sure. And I'm sorry. I've got to say that I'm sorry for their performance as of late.
Listen, it can only go up from the bottom, right?
Right, exactly. Are you an NHL guy?
I am not an NHL guy.
Okay.
If I had to choose a team, I would choose the Islanders. But I can't watch hockey. I just can't get into it, and I tried. I even started a fantasy hockey team because I was like, you know what? Maybe fantasy hockey will get me involved in the game. And then I actually tried to, like, be a Rangers fan because everybody I knew were Rangers fans. And I'm like, if I just like the Rangers, then I'll have guys who like – I can't watch them.
Yeah.
I can't.
Oh, man.
And then football is the worst thing. I'm a fan of the worst team to be a fan of in the NFL.
Who's that?
I'm a Buffalo Bills fan.
Oh, man.
So,
I mean,
I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, and I was alive during the time where they lost 4 consecutive Super Bowls. So, there's no end to – there's nothing quite like going to 4 Super Bowls in a row and then losing all 4.
Have you jumped off of – you know, a structure and onto a table yet?
No, I have not, but I know the fans there really love it.
Because, I mean, they've had some success as of late. They made the playoffs this past year, and that was like all the rage was jumping off and risking your back's health.
When you're in Buffalo, it's very cold, and you got a couple of things to do. You can watch hockey, you can watch football, and you can get really, really, really inebriated in the parking lot and do dumb things.
Yeah, no doubt. And then what about college team? Do you have a college team that might, you know, have all of your favorite sports all in one?
So I'm a kind of an Ohio State fan just because Ohio State to me was always the place that if I was going to be great and play football, it would be Ohio State. My sister went to the University of Florida around the time that they started winning national championships in basketball and football. So, like, I ended up getting kind of caught up in University of Florida.
Mm.
But But again, I said earlier when we first started that Long Island is a very weird place. It's different than everywhere else. We don't care about college sports pretty much at all. And I know that that's a weird thing to say, but we have two pro hockey teams, two pro football teams, two pro basketball teams. Technically, Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills are also in New York, so you could add that there's a third team. It takes me 2.5 hours to drive to Philadelphia from Long Island, so I could watch Philadelphia games. So there's so many, and then it's just New York, and there's so much stuff to do. That like college sports has kind of always just gotten washed to the side. Okay. So I think I'm a product of my environment, and college sports just I don't have a team.
It's just like the last thing that comes to mind when you're trying to watch some entertaining sports.
Yeah, you know, they're just, and I'll watch some college stuff just because, like anybody else, I'll watch, you know, Final Four, I'll watch College World Series, and I'll watch the National Championship game, but I don't find myself, you know, enamored with, you know, with the comings and goings of what's going on inside college sports, outside of the fact that I train so many kids who are in college sports for big-time universities and all that stuff. I'm more often, when I ask them, I'll usually like, hey, how's the season going? And they'll usually be like, oh, we're doing great. And I'm like, I know I'm happy that your team is doing great, but I really only care how you're doing, how you feel.
Right.
And then, like, you know, so, like, for me, it's always about the individual kid that's my kid. You know, they're my athlete. They're my superior family. So, like, I want to know how they're doing. So college sports to me, as long as the teams that my kids are on are winning, I'm happy.
I'm going to circle you back around to your profession. And I want to know if you could give one piece of advice to a developing athlete, what would it be?
Oh, man. For better performance or to get the most out of sports?
Let's go better performance.
So better performance. For better performance, the big thing that I would tell a young athlete is to focus on giving maximum effort whenever they're doing something in training. So if they're a baseball player and they're swinging a bat, swing the bat as hard as you can.
Yeah.
If you're an 8-year-old kid and you have a baseball in your hand, throw that baseball as hard as you can. If you're a parent of a kid who is that age, they're 8 years old, let them swing as hard as they can. Don't care so much about where the ball goes or what happens, because at the end of the day, the MLB is looking for kids who throw 100. They're not looking for kids who throw 82 with great control.
Right.
And control is something that you can gain as you get older. Velocity is something that starts to kind of be built into who you are by the time you're X age old. So my biggest thing is allow athletes to bring intent, and athletes to play multiple sports and give as much effort as they can when they're playing them. Don't just isolate yourself into one sport, because you end up being an athlete that's afraid to give 100% and has a limited skill base. So that's what I would say there.
Awesome. Bill, thank you so much. Sorry, go ahead.
I do want to say one thing. I do want to just end this on one thing, because I think it's an important point of that same thought process. And it's that if you give everything you have into a sport and you don't end up achieving the goal that you had at the outset, you're still going to build a lot of equity for yourself in terms of who you're going to become and what's going to happen from it. Mm. So we talked about the guy who I trained who had an NFL career, and now he's getting, you know, more free education. That NFL career has given him opportunities for other things. You know, my forays in the sports allowed me to be a strength conditioning coach, you know, be published and work with professional athletes and do all this stuff. So if an athlete gives that great effort and they do that stuff and they're not afraid to fail, it will also open up the world for them beyond.
Amazing. Bill, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And I learned a lot. I hope that the people that are listening to this podcast are also able to take away quite a bit from this this interview. So thanks again for being here with us.
I really appreciate being along, and I hope everybody got a lot out of this.
Hey, guys, don't forget to share, like, and subscribe.